whole selection of everything.
Okay, here we go. We're on Hey Amid Aleph at the bottom. Unfortunately, I finished about four. What? Yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. Hey Amid Aleph. Two lines from the bottom. We were discussing what the word basar stands for, and one interpretation was busha srucha rima. Others going to give a different explanation of what this is, stands for, the letters beis, sin, reish. Because really, the first interpretation used the word srucha really is a samach, which is not a sin, although they sound the same. So ika de amri, there are those who say the last, that sin of basar stands for the word sheol. It means sheol, which means the grave. And that's where basar ends up being, in the grave. They prefer this version because then it's the letter sin, which is much closer to than samach is to the letter sin as well. It's rather sheol starts with a shin. It looks the same as a sin of basar and not like a samach of srucha. Dichsiv, that's what he says. Dichsiv, because the word sheol is with a sin. Okay? Whereas srucha is written with the letter samach, so it's not as close. Fine. Next point. A little bit more. Amar Ravashi, says Ravashi, kol adam sheyesh bo gasas ruach, anyone who is arrogant, lasof nifchas, at the end will be minimized, diminished in stature. Shenemers, go up to the next page on Hamad Bays. It talks about the mitzora. The mitzora, there's different types of skin diseases for a mitzora, and some of them are called the se'es and the sapachas. Okay? Yeah, see, skin psoriasis is known as se'es, which is a distinct shade of white, and that's a subdivision of skin psoriasis, which is sapachas. So two different words to explain the psoriasis. Even though those are words describing those lesions or the skin colorations, these words can also have a double meaning. And se'es and sapachas can mean the following. Ve'ein se'es el lashon gavah, se'es from the word naso, to lift up, to raise. So se'es is an expression of raising up, being high. So the arrogant person who will get saras, you know, you could think you're high, but the next word, shenemra, how do we know it means to lift? Valkol ha'arim haramim valkol ha'kvos ha'nisa'os. Upon all the high mountains and upon the raised up hills. Nisa'os, naso, means to raise. So se'es is the root of raising up. So that means a high thing. But the next word says the sapachas, vein sapachas al tfela. But sapachas means something that's subsidiary, not as important as the other thing. Shenemar, so you have another pasuk that says, sefachenina, attach me, please, al echas hakunos, to one of the priestly divisions, lechol pasal, eat bread. So you see, that means to attach. So therefore, we look at the two words, seis and sapachas. Seis means to be high, and like primary, and sapachas means to be supplementary. So anyone who's arrogant, and that's one of the causes of tsaras, of getting leprosy, so then it describes the leprosy skin affliction as se'es, high, the sapachas, subsidiary, so the person who makes himself high will eventually be made small. Next, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Yeshua ben Levi says, Bar'e, come and see. Kama gedolim numuche erochim Hashem. Look and see how great are the lowly of spirit before Hashem. That when the Beis HaMikdash existed, what happened? Adam makriv olaf, a person brought a ola offering, that's a burnt offering. If he brought a burnt offering, so what reward does he get? Schar ola b'yado. He gets credited for bringing up a burnt offering, but not for any other type of offering, only the offering that he brought, which is obvious. Mincha, if he brought a mincha offering, that's a flour and water offering, what reward did he get? Schar mincha b'yado, the reward for bringing a mincha offering and nothing else. Etc., etc., with all the karbanos. Avomi shedaito shvala, but a person who's very humble, what do we see here? Ma'ul of Akosta Torah considers it ki'ilu hikrev kol karbanos kol masif. He brought all the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. Wow, how is that? Shenemar, the Pasuk says, look at what King David says. Zivchei Elokim, the offerings to God, is a ruach nishbra, a broken spirit. The greatest offering. Now it says, Zivchei Elokim, sacrifices, meaning all the types of sacrifices, is equal to a broken spirit. So when the Holy Temple stood, if one committed a sin for which he must bring a chatas, he could not receive atonement by bringing an ola or a mincha offering instead. Right? You have to bring a chatos if you sinned. But now, when we no longer have the sacrifice, if one humbles himself before God and repents with all his heart and spirit, this is tantamount to having brought whatever offering is needed to effect his atonement. So that's a very good thing for Elul. Elul, we're coming up to Rosh Hashanah, and we have, unfortunately, some of us may still have a few sins from the year. And therefore, and we can't bring korbanos on those sins. So what are we going to do? You got to be humble. You got to come into Rosh Hashanah being humble. And that is will lead you to do tshuva. And then you'll be able to, it's if you brought all the korbanos that you needed. Number one, that's the first thing about a humble person. And another thing about a humble person, v'la'od, not only that, el she'ein tfilos nemesos, his prayer is not despised by God. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, lev nishbar v'nidke, a broken and crushed heart, Elohim lo sivza, Hashem will not disdain. That's the second half of the pasuk we just had before, that the offerings to Hashem are a broken heart. That's the second part of the pasuk. And the commentary says, usually when you have a broken utensil, nobody wants to look at it. But Hashem will look at a person who is broken. And that's a beautiful thing for Hashem. Okay. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, "Kol hasom or chosav b'lomaseh." Whoever appraises his ways in this world, meaning to say, he makes a cheshbon on nefesh. In other words, you know, am I doing everything right? So if he makes that kind of a cheshbon, zoicha v'roya b'yishuasa shal Kodesh Baruch Hu, who merit and see the salvation of Hakodesh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'som derech. One who sets his way, meaning to say he's checking his ways, arenu, I will show him b'yesh Elohim, the salvation of God. So so that's what footnote 10 says. I shall set the way for the penitent to return to me, and if he does, I will show my salvation of Israel. So now that's what the pasuk means. So al tikre, that's what the literal pasuk means. Hashem will set the way. Al tikre v'sam, don't read it only v'sam, and he who sets, elo, you can read it also v'sham derech. But he, what? Visham, and he appraises his way. That letter, sin, that three-letter thing could be a sin or a shim. Son means he puts his way. Sham means to appraise and to do a cheshbon ha-nefesh. You make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, then Hashem, he will see Hashem's salvation. And this is the end of the Agadat Gemara. Now we start with back to regular Gemara, back to our Mishnah. And the Gemara asks a very strong question on the Mishnah. What's the next part of the Mishnah? The Mishnah asks, how do you, remember there's three parts for a woman to be have to drink the water. First the husband warns her, then, and there's a machlokas, you need two witnesses or one witness for that. Then they have to see her in seclusion. So machlokas, you need two witnesses or one witness. And if we don't know what happened, and she denies any bad things, she drinks the water. So now, the Mishnah says, so what is considered a warning? What does the husband have to say? That's all the Mishnah. I'm just reviewing the Mishnah. So look what the commentary says. In the presence of two, it says, do not speak with that particular person. Now, we were having a little trouble when we were learning that. That's what it said in the Mishnah. That what's considered a warning? What does the husband have to say? He says, don't speak. That's what the Mishnah said. So then what has to be step two to make problems? Well, what? Well, you'd think so, but that's not true. Let me ask you, the husband says, don't speak to that guy again. And in the middle of Bathurst Street, she talks to this guy. Are you going to say that she's forbidden to her husband?
No.
What did she do? She just spoke to him. Obviously, there's got to be a seclusion. So if there's got to be a seclusion, what kind of warning is that? Don't speak to him. What should the warning have been?
Don't be with him.
Don't seclude yourself with him. So this is where the Gemara is having a problem over here. It says that the warning is, the Mishnah said, the warning is don't speak to him. What's the next step? Well, they have to witness for the seclusion. Well, that has nothing to do with the warning. If he didn't warn her not to be secluded. So this is, you're going to see Gemara is going to ask this question. Gemara asks, Ho gufakasha. One line is difficult from the next line. Now the Gemara is going to go over the two lines and show you the difficulty. Amrit, you said, what's a warning? Amr la bifnei shnaim. He has to tell her in front of two people the following. Al tidabri mish ploni zeh. Don't speak with this man. So now, if this is the warning, right? So that's the official warning. Okay, so what would you think? What would you think would from that, if that's the warning, you think, what would the next bad step be? Amma, I'd say, dibur stirahi. So that next thing called stira, the next step would be, if we see that speaking with the suspected guy is like being in seclusion with him. Look at the footnote. In other words, even if she speaks with him in an open market area as a marketplace, this is considered isolating herself with that person, for which she becomes forbidden to her husband, liable to drink. If that's what the warning is, right? For since the Mishnah has designated an admonition against speaking as the official kinui, as the official warning, the act that they're speaking of, there must have the legal impact of an actual seclusion. For not, what's the point of the warning? In other words, if he warns her about something, she has to violate the warning. See, that's what the first line would imply. The first line, we know you have to have kinui, warning, and stira, seclusion. If the warning is don't speak to the guy, she has to violate the warning. So what's that? So you think, well, I guess speaking to the guy in public would be seclusion. Well, that you clearly know is not, because Vahadar Tani. Now look at the next line of the Mishnah. The very next clause of the Mishnah says, Dibra Imam, she speaks with the guy, she's still allowed to be with her husband. That's the next line of the Mishnah. Umo teres lecho betruma, and she's allowed to eat truma if she's a wife of a kohen. So Alma, we see dibur love klumu, speaking is nothing. Right? Now, right? So then why is that? What kind of warning is that if speaking is nothing? And look at the footnote continues. The Mishnah's next clause, she's a woman who violates a warning against speaking with this suspect is not rendered a sota, which indicates that merely speaking together is not tantamount seclusion. Hence, the Mishnah has not answered its question regarding what constitutes a legal warning. Right? So, what's going on? So, therefore, we're going to get one of these answers that there's a little bit missing in between the lines of the Mishnah. We got to put in something missing in between the lines. Amar Abaye says, Abaye, Hachi Komar. This is how we have to explain the Mishnah. That even though the Mishnah asks the question, how does the husband warn her, it doesn't immediately answer its questions, but rather it's teaching two sets of circumstances where the husband warned against speaking and one where he warned against seclusion. In other words, you got to wait a little bit and see what's going on over here. So this is what the Mishnah says. Number one, first it says, what's a warning? Well, one warning is al tadabri. She says, don't speak. The dibra, that's one kind of warning. There's two types of warnings. One is much more powerful than the other. That's warning number one. Now, that's what the Mishnah wrote. But now, in between the lines, so al tadabri v'dibra, if he says al tadabri v'nistara, if he says don't speak with him, and she secluded herself with him. Now, it's a debate in the text if we read the next two words or not. The lo klum. See, it's in brackets over there. The English does not translate those words in the brackets. Okay? And look at the note. While commenting on Bai's revision, Rashi reverses the order of our text. Okay, fine. Anyway, but so Mishnah says, he says, don't speak with her, and she speaks. Don't speak with her, and she goes in seclusion. Keep going. The Mishnah goes on. Altisri, but what if he says, don't seclude? But Vidibraman, she speaks with him. Well then, Adayin still Muteris Labesa. She's allowed to her house. Muteris Lechel Betruma. She's allowed to eat Truma. But if Nichnasa Ima Labesa says it, but if she goes into seclusion with the other guy, Vishasa, and she stays there enough Kedei Tuma to be defiled, then Asur Labesa, she's prohibited to her home. Asur Lechel Truma, she cannot eat Truma. So the only case where she's forbidden, she actually violates a legal warning against seclusion. It comes out, there's four possibilities. He could say, do not speak with him. Okay? So, if he says, don't speak with the guy, and she speaks with the guy, that's nothing.
If she's find a warning her?
Well, a husband can always say, I don't want you speaking to that guy. He doesn't want to make her a sota. He's upset. He says, you know, you
say,
stop.
Don't speak to him. Say, don't seclude.
Right away. Wait. No. We have to look at the
because
scenario. We have to look at the scenario. Right. That's what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah is saying this. Let's say a husband in front of two witnesses, I don't want you talking with that guy anymore. And guess what? There's two witnesses who's here talking. So the Mishnah is saying, that's nothing. That's nothing.
No, why bother?
Well, you have to say it. You might think, you know what, she's such a terrible wife, you can divorce her tomorrow. You could say, you know, a wife who goes against a woman, you might think of a husband in front of two witnesses says, don't talk to that man. And she thought, man, she should be divorced. That's already unfaithful. You might think that. You're saying that's not a problem. The next thing the Mishnah is in between the lines saying, the guy says, don't speak to her, and she goes into seclusion, and there's two witnesses, she's still not usher to the husband because she didn't violate the warning. He didn't warn her against seclusion. She says, you told me not to speak to him. I didn't speak to him. Well, that's all you said. That's all you said. Next, if he said, don't seclude yourself, if the warning was don't seclude yourself with him, and then she speaks with him, she's still okay because she didn't violate the warning. The only time it's a problem is when he says in front of the witnesses, don't seclude yourself, and then she does seclude herself, and there's witnesses who are there to know there's a seclusion. That's the only time she's usher husband. That's what the Mishnah means. And the Mishnah says, so what is a kinui? The Mishnah says, in between the lines, there's a number of types of warnings. Some are effective to later on make her prohibited, some are ineffective. So of the four possible warnings, there's only one scenario where she would have to drink the water, where he warned her against seclusion and she went into seclusion. That's the only time. If he warned her against speaking and she went into seclusion, that's not a problem. Okay, now we go on to the next sugya. We'll begin today the next sugya, and this sugya goes for a while. And we said, so what happens now? The Mishnah went on to the next line. We said, if she indeed was warned against seclusion, went into seclusion, then she has to drink the water, she's usher to her husband, and she's a cult married to a kohen, she can't eat truma. Now, what happens if before she drinks the water, she went into seclusion, before anything was decided, the Mishnah said, the mace, what if the husband now dies, and he has no sons, no children? So normally, we have a mitzvah of yibum. The brother, if he has a brother, the brother's obliged to marry the woman. But in this case, once he warned her, she went to seclusion, we're not sure what her status is, no yibum, but there is chalitza. Chalitza is when you don't do yibum. Remember, here's the point. When a woman is, the husband dies, and there's no children, there's a brother.
After warning her.
No, forget about that. Let's go back to the regular laws of yibum for a minute. It's this week's parsha, the regular laws of yibum. Husband loves his wife, no problems. They just didn't have any kids. The husband dies. Now, normally, when a husband dies, that alone permits a woman to marry somebody else. Normally, man had a wife and kids and children and this. They lived, yeah. Husband dies. You don't need any formal. Remember, they got married through a formal act of kiddushin. They can be. She now can go to another man under two circumstances. Either the husband formally divorces her, or the husband dies. Once he dies, she's already can marry another guy. Yep. Now, the question, problem is when she dies and he dies and there's no kids and there is a brother, all of a sudden there says she's not free to just marry when she wants. Mm-hmm. She has a connection to the brother. The brother, as they say, has first option here, as it were. And really, she would be obliged to marry this brother because that would maintain the deceased brother's lineage. Okay, so she's not free at that point. No. Now, if let's say it doesn't work out, he doesn't want to marry her, she doesn't want to marry him, then you still have to do some action, and that's the chalitza, where she removes his shoe, and that's the formal act that severs any bond she has with this family. Okay, that's normally. Now, let's take that halacha, and now mix it with this halacha. If a man warned his wife, and she violated the warning, and she went into seclusion. At that point, we don't know if she
went against seclusion.
She went into seclusion and warned it, and she went against the warning of seclusion. At this point now, the husband and wife, they cannot be together because she may have defiled herself. Yeah. We're not sure 100%, but they can't, because of the doubt, they can't be together. If he's a Kohen, she's not allowed to eat truma.
Right.
Now, if the husband now dies before the drinking of the water to find out, we don't know what happened. And if that husband who died had no children, but he has a brother, so now that's what the Mishnah is saying, so now what do you do? On the one hand, there's a mitzvah of yibum. On the other hand, she was prohibited to her husband. So the Mishnah says an interesting scenario. Says, well, yibum you can't do, because maybe she was forbidden to her husband. On the other hand, you still do chalitza. You do chalitza, in other words, and then she'll be permitted to somebody else. In other words, she's not so obliged to the family that she has to do, that the yibum has to happen, that the brother marries her. The brother does not marry. It only says chaletzes. He gives her a chalitza, implying there is no yibum. I can understand why.
Well, so she's free from the woman.
Only after the brother gives a chalitza. What the Gemara ultimately is going to ask is, that doesn't make sense. Either yo-yo, nish-nish. Yeah. Why are you going halbazach here? Why are you going half? If you don't need a yibum, you don't need a chalitza. If you do need a chalitza, why not a yibum? That's what Gemara is now going to give, about five different answers to this question. And today maybe we'll do one. Okay, tomorrow is going to be the rest. We're just going to do one. First of all, Gemara asks, Amai, why is this the ruling? Why is the ruling no yibum, yes chalitza? Gemara asks right away, Tisya beim nam yibumi. Let there be yibum. Let the brother marry her. Now look what it says. Now at first glance, this question is difficult to understand. Now think about it. Is that such a good question? Now why was she prohibited to the husband? Why was she prohibited to the husband?
Because she did. She
we don't know. We don't know. So that's why she's prohibited out of a doubt.
Yeah.
So we clarify. So she prohibited the husband. Of course you can't do yibum.
Right.
Because if it went to the husband, not. So what, the brother is better? Yeah. So that's why the commentaries don't even understand the Gemara's question. But anyway, we have stated in the previous note that a suspected soda is treated at least with regard to stringencies as if she had indeed committed adultery.
Right.
If so, her yibum should still be prohibited just as the yibum of a confirmed soda. How about, let's say like this, let's say the woman admits, okay, I admit I was unfaithful. Okay. And then the husband dies. Okay, would there be a mitzvah of yibum? Absolutely not, because she was supposed to be divorced. All right, so now if it's a doubtful situation, so why would there be yibum then? So what then is the Gemara's question? What's the Gemara's question? Well, of course, it's obvious why you don't do yibum. Why is the Gemara saying why don't you do yibum?
Yeah.
So Tosfos Rosh here and Rosh answers that a confirmed sota, if she admitted it, is treated like an erva, I mean a forbidden relation, because of two factors. She is called defiled, and in the language of a commandment against the husband or the adulterer having further relation with her, it is the combination of these two factors that exempts her from yibum. In other words, she's called defiled, okay, and in the language of a negative commandment, against the husband or adulterer, and she's also not allowed to the husband. There's two things. She's called defiled, and she's not allowed to her husband, right? If she admits, there's two things. She's defiled. She's called a defiled woman. And she's for her husband. So you have two factors, and that would exempt. It is the combination of these two factors that exempts her from yibum. If she admitted it, then of course there's no yibum. While a suspected sota is indeed called defiled, because this is not done, but it's not done in the language of a negative commandment. Hence, she's not regarded as an erva. She's not considered a forbidden relationship.
How could you say she's defiled and yet not say that's...
Because she did a bad thing. She went against her husband, went into seclusion.
So
but she's not considered a prohibited relation, that she's forbidden to him completely. We're not sure. Anyway, it still says it's unclear. Look and look and look. Anyway, but that's the Gemara's question. Anyway, the Gemara says, why don't we do yibum? So Amar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, this is the answer, I think. Amar Krah, the Pasuk says, let's look at the regular case of divorce. This week's Parsha as well. What's a regular case of divorce? The Torah, we learned this in Gittin when we learned Gittin. V'yotza mibeso, it says she leaves her house. V'hoisa, that's after she got divorced. Mm-hmm. She leaves her house. V'holchen, she goes. V'hoisa le'ish acher. And then she goes and marry another guy. Remember that whole thing is saying where a man, he didn't find favor in his wife, he divorces his wife, she leaves, she marries another guy. Then the Torah says, and if the second guy divorces her, she can't go back to the first guy. That's the whole pasuk. Okay, but it's going through the order. If a husband divorces the woman, she can leave the house, she can go to and marry another man. Now here's the problem. Let's look carefully at the words. Now let's look at the Hebrew words in the box there. V'yotza, she goes out, mibeso, from his house. V'holcha, she goes, v'hoisa, and she now can get married, le'ish, to a man.
Yeah.
Now, why do you got to write the word acher, another man? Of course it's another man.
Yeah.
What do you need the word acher for? Just say she went and married a man.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's not the same husband that divorced her.
Yeah.
It's another man. Yeah. Obviously, the man is another man. Why do I have to say the extra word another? Ish acher. Right? It should, right? So that's the question. That's the Gemara says. Why does it say acher? Yeah. Just say leish. The answer is leish acher. To another man, she may be married. It's coming to exclude velo liyavam and not in the midst of yibum. It's speaking, obviously, now you have to know the context, and let's go back to the context. The commentary notes, let's look carefully at the whole text. If a man marries a woman and lives with her, and it came to pass that she does not find favor in his eyes, the words of the Torah is, ki motza bo ervas dovor, because he found in her an adulterous thing, and he wrote her a bill of divorce. The following verse says, and she left his house and went and married another man. Okay? So now you understand. It should be noted that this passage actually refers to a confirmed sota, not a suspected one. Nevertheless, our Gemara applies it exegetically to suspected sota because a confirmed sota's exemption from Yimachlitz is already known from another source. Anyway, so it's saying like this. She is divorced because the husband, she did bad stuff or even suspected. So le'isha cher means she can marry only another. Why is that another? That in the case of a suspected sota, we don't know, she can only marry another guy who's not related at all, but not a brother and not a yavam. That's what that extra word. In other words, it says, if the husband divorces her because he's not happy with her, why is he not happy? Well, there could be a number of reasons. Either she really is a confirmed immoral woman or suspected.
Right.
Still divorcing her. So she can now get divorced, right? And she marries acher, a man. Right. Why is it another man? It means another man that's far away from this mishpacha, a stranger.
Yeah,
she can marry a stranger, but she can't marry who? The guy's brother. And that's how we know that. Le'ish acher, to another man who's far away, a stranger, v'lo le'yavam, but not to the brother and perform the mitzvah of yibum. If that man divorced her because even suspected adultery, she can go to a stranger, but not to the brother. Okay?
So that clarifies the other.
Right. So if the Torah wished to teach only that the suspected adulteress is permitted to remarry after receiving get from her husband, the verse could have simply said, v'ho'cha le'ish. She went and married a man without the modifier, another. This apparently superfluous word thus alludes to a different case where the husband died childless before divorcing her and excludes the yavam from eligibility to marry her. For the verse now reads as follows, and it came to pass that she does not find favor in his eyes because he found in her an adulterous thing and he writes her a bill of divorce. Or if she left his house by any means, even if he died, that's what it means, and she left the house by any means even besides divorce because he died before he could give her a divorce. In either case, if she wishes to remarry, she must choose another man and not a yavam. Because the yavam is excluded because he's not considered another man vis-a-vis the woman since her first marriage was already with a brother where she was bound. In other words, it's saying like this. When she marries husband A, as long till there are children, she has a connection with his brother. If she likes it or not. Now, if the husband, now even if she commits adultery, suspected of adultery, whatever. Well, the pasuk's saying if she commits or suspected, he wants to divorce her. And he does divorce her. Or, it says, or she goes, she just leaves the house. Why does she leave the house? If the husband died. So then she can marry who? Acher, a stranger. But not the brother. Because the brother was connected with the husband who died. And that's the Torah saying she's forbidden. That's why it is. So now, one last question. Okay, one last point, another 2 minutes. So wait a minute, if you're telling me that it's not there, so Amar Le'Abai, Abai says, if that's the case, El Mayata Chalitza Nami Loboy. So what do you need Chalitza for? If she totally has no business with the brother, why does he even have to give her a Chalitza? Just let her go. If the husband died,
yeah.
What did the Torah say? She can marry somebody else.
Right.
She no longer is connected with the family. So what do you need the chalitza for? Right? She married another man. Doesn't apply chalitza. Amar Lei, the Gemara answers, Ilu, Ishil Abal, if the husband would have still been alive.
Yeah.
What if the husband was alive under this scenario? Right? Milo boy get, wouldn't he have to give a get? If the husband was alive, even suspect, if they get, so you had to do something to get her out of the house. So hashtanami, tiborchli. So now you need a chalitz as well. You got to do something to get her out of the house. the brother can't be any worse than the husband was. Since the brother-in-law stands in the place of the deceased husband, it's only reasonable that he must sever the marital bond by preferring Lisa. Because the husband had to do something to sever the bond. So she can't marry him, but yes, the bond has to be severed, and that is with the chalitza.
So she cannot leave the house without a chalitza.
A get by the original husband or a chalitza by the brother. But there never was a plan of her marrying the brother. Because she couldn't, see, just like, what was her relationship with her husband? She can't be with the husband anymore, so therefore she can't be with the brother. But the husband had to divorce her, so therefore the brother has to give her a chalitza. We're not clear, so she can't marry him, and that's the pasuk says can't marry the brother. But the husband would have had to give a get. In other words, the brother is exactly what the husband is. The husband couldn't be with her, so now that he's dead, so the brother can't do yibum. The husband had to give her a get, so the brother has to give chalitza. This is answer.
In a case where the husband dies.
Before we know the truth.
Before we know where she's.
But she's in a doubtful state. That's answer number one. Tomorrow we'll do four more answers.
Did she marry her first?